Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
In the Zen tradition, they call the bell the mindfulness bell. Because as they ring the bell, it brings our attention back into present moment awareness. And then we operate from the freedom to choose in every breath. Are we going to put our attention on that peace, the stillness, the abiding love? Or are we going to let our attention run away with a thought pattern or a disturbing emotional arising? It was 21 years ago that I was in Ascutney, Vermont on a 10-day silent retreat with Thich Nhat Hanh. And it was the same month that my mother suddenly died of a heart attack and my teacher, a week later, died of a brain tumor. And a week later, I'm sitting at the foot of Thich Nhat Hanh in grief. And he reminded us that all of life is suffering, which is one of the great noble truths. And when you become a master of the art of suffering, whether it's sadness, whatever it might be, when that wave of suffering arises, you embrace it. And in the embracing of the suffering, you transform it. And this is a lifelong endeavor. And so throughout the 10 days that I was with him, he would say, when a suffering thought or anger, fear, hatred, anxiety, whenever it would arise, he would say, smile at the anger. Smile at the fear. Smile at the sadness. And in that silent smile, in a strange sort of way, you embrace it. And in the embracing of it, you transform it. And he says, this is where we achieve the art of happiness, by first embracing the art of suffering. And he says, start with little sufferings, and then you can build up to the bigger ones. And I found myself laughing. Because then we don't run away from life, but we meet life as it is. And then everything, absolutely everything, becomes a portal for grace, which is the unmerited givingness of the universe. If you will, it's the flowing in of love. Thich Nhat Hanh admonished us that there is a river of light, a river of love. And he says, drink from that river of light and you will glow. Drink from that river of love and you will experience compassion overflowing. And he says, what you are is that river of love, of light. You are not a drop in the river. You are the river itself. Rumi called it an ocean. He got bigger than a river. And he said, oh, drop, give it up. The ocean for a drop? He said, oh, to be wooed by the ocean, where all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. And so we begin to experience ourselves not as a separate drop of love in an ocean of love, but rather we are the one love, that vast universal love, experiencing itself individualized, if you will, but all the while the same love. A love that can't be divided and separated. And so as we move into this new month of December, the theme that I will be exploring is drinking from this river of light. Drinking from this river of love. Where Jesus would say, I of myself do nothing. It's this love within, this light within, that doeth the work. And when he would use metaphor by saying, don't put your light under a bushel, he was saying, let the light that we all share radiate out from us, from the one light and the one love that we all share. What happens then is we begin to perceive from oneness, not from an individualized separate self, but the one life is awakening in this holy instant, and it sees itself mirrored everywhere, even in the little water bug that Jody rescued from the floor of the center this morning and carried it outside. That was an act of oneness, an act of intimacy. And Jesus would say, if you've done it to the smallest of these, you've done it unto me. And so we begin to see life differently. Not as a fragmented, linear, time-space-oriented thing, because time collapses, and all we have is the eternal now. And space isn't here to separate us, but it's here to expand us. And then we realize that we are space itself. I was reading Einstein this morning, and he says, the trap is to think that matter is real. Matter is simply energy, and energy cannot be created or destroyed. And when you know yourself as the energy of the universe, the energy of love, the energy of light, wow, well, then there are no thoughts that can get in the way, because this energy doesn't think. This energy doesn't have problems. It just is. And then we move into the beautiful life of expression, which is what I'm speaking about today. The soul wants to express itself, whereas the ego wants to impress the world. And when we move into this innate expression of the one, my Zen calendar yesterday said the seed does not know what the flower will be. And so could we move into the seed of potential of our divine self and know that ultimately it will flower within the body of our experience, but the seed doesn't know how that flower will look. And so it doesn't outline, it doesn't project, it doesn't tell the flower what it must look like, but rather it trusts that there is this inherent unfolding from within. And even Thich Nhat Hanh used the metaphor, the lotus grows out of the mud, and you need the mud in order for the flower to bloom. And so when we experience the muddy aspect of our life, could we embrace that, knowing that that is the doorway for transformation? And then all is sacred, all is holy, and all is the life of expression of the One, every single expression. We are an inlet and an outlet for this divine awareness. And as it moves in, it transforms us. And as it moves out, it creates a resonating field. And by right of consciousness, those who are in a similar vibrational field are drawn to each other. And this is called the law of attraction. And so as we open our heart and we see the oneness everywhere, a little deer might come our way, as it did with Serena the other day, and look into her eyes. And she saw her own self in the form of a deer coming to greet her, not as separate, but as a part of the one life, the one love, honoring itself. And so I invite you to place your hands over your heart, feel that deep connection within. And when you're ready to play in the field of the unmanifest with me and enter into that child of wonder, open your eyes. Be here now. And know that everything is given to us, everything. We are receivers. And it's so interesting because I had my birthday on Thursday. And my husband is a numerologist. when I met him years ago, well, I met him in college in 1971, but we didn't start dating until, in fact, we have our 46th anniversary on December 16th, 1975, when we decided to make a commitment. And we were both lost souls. I mean, we were flounders par excellence, both graduated from college, but we didn't have a clue who we were. So we moved to San Francisco, not the best place for two young, handsome gay men to be, because it's a candy land, if you know what I mean. But he got a job. He created a job for himself. He was a street artist, and he can't draw for anything, but he would get little t-shirts, and he was starring in The Little Prince in San Francisco. He was playing the fox, and so he kept drawing Little Prince t-shirts, and he'd sell them in the Embarcadero for, I think it was $5 a t-shirt. Remember, this is 1975. $5 a t-shirt, and in the meantime, to make extra cash, he would do numerology readings. And you all know, some of you have had your numerology readings. And he'd say, I can use the numerology to tell them what I really think about them, but I can say the numerology says it. Just giving you a hint. Oh, your life is really a mess. He didn't see that in the numbers. He was just telling you. Anyway, I just got out of my ninth year. And, you know, we went to the gospel of 46 years, going through every year we've been together. And what does the ninth year mean? The ninth year means you get rid of everything that doesn't serve you as you start your first year. The first year of a nine-year cycle. So Thursday was the big day. So the question was, what are you letting go of, David? And the response to that was, it's more like, what am I stepping into? Because what I'm stepping into, and it's so funny because when you ask, you receive. And I didn't know what I was going to talk about for December, so I went to my library, and this book came off the walls. It's called Drinking from the River of Light by Mark Nepo. And it kind of spoke to me where my first year is supposed to go. He was in London, and he was at the Museum of Art, and there was a painting by William Blake, and it was the painting of a man kneeling at the foot of a waterfall, and he's drinking the water from the waterfall, and it's a waterfall of light. And in that holy instant, Nepo said, this is my story. I'm on my knees, I'm humble, and I'm drinking from the light of the One. And he said, as an artist, as a poet, you know that you are a conduit for this creative something. And so he wrote this beautiful book about accessing this presence that's available to all of us. And anybody who's in the field of arts understands that, because you realize that you're really not the doer. There's a creative something that expresses through you, that paints as you, that dances as you, that writes poetry through you. And it's divinely given. You know, we've had so many people that point to the same thing. I quote Jesus often, who says, I myself do nothing. It's the something within that does the work. He was there. It was Rumi who said, there's only one rule. He says, break the wine glass and fall back to the breath of the wine glass blower. Now, it doesn't get any more intimate than that. The glass represents maybe you, the institution, the belief system, the thing that you've identified with, the object. When you break that, all that's left is the subjective reality of love that Seamus was talking about this morning. Fall back to the love that knows no other. Jody's beautiful treatment. Love is a verb expressing as all of us. And when you serve the love, which is serving the One, well, then it's not about you. It's never been about you. And, you know, so the revelation on the first day of my first nine-year cycle was, as we go into a new year, there's a new class. And I'm going to be teaching Awakening the World by Llewellyn Von Lee, a book that was written in 2006, but I wasn't ready for it then. But I am now. Because Llewellyn talks about a mature spirituality cannot come from the individual. It has to come from oneness itself. And you know, Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind, he says, one, one, one. If we teach anything, we teach oneness. So what would oneness know versus a Josh or a David? What would oneness, what would that quantum field of awareness, it'd say that it's not about you. In the very first chapter of the book, it's first you have to get out of you. The only obstacle is we have me, we've got my agenda, my goals, and he says, none of that is real. And then, what would it look like for this greater something? So here's how Mark Nepo talks about it as the poet. Very beginning of this lovely book, he quotes a poem. And you know, poetry is the language of God that comes through many. So here's what William Stafford said in his poem, The Way It Is. The way it is, not as a passive way it is, but the way it is as a dynamic livingness. And he says this, there is a thread that you follow, It goes among the things that change all around us, but it does not change. Now, the definition of the real, reality with a capital R, reality is that which does not come and go. Beliefs come and go, they're not real. This body comes and goes, it's not real. But what doesn't come and go? The love is always there. You know, we have the stuffed animal of Bert sitting in the classroom over there. And every time I come in on Sunday morning, I feel the love that never went anywhere. It's still there. That's the thread. He said, it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about this thread. Well, there's this thread. But it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. God knows. Look at the world. People get hurt or they die. And you suffer and then you get old. 73. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. So that was the poem. And then he goes on to explain, to discover this thread that goes through everything is the main reason to listen, to deeply listen to what is, to express. And that's what we're talking about, this life of expression. And then to find meaning in all of that. He said, poets and even Jesus, so many of the, what's his name? Joseph Campbell, myth and sign and symbol. You can give a symbol that speaks more volumes than it does to explain it. So he goes on the idea of the net of Indra. They say the universe is the net of Indra, where every knot in the net is a jewel in which you can see all the other jewels in the entire universe, and each one is reflected by every other jewel. This is a metaphor for our part in a living universe where each soul is such a jewel. You know, when we talk about awakening the essential self, which is the soul within our being, but then you realize this essential self is part of the universal self. And so then it's no more the drop of me, but it's the ocean of love as all of us, where we're the same. We're not separate. That's the place to go to. For each soul is such a jewel, which when clear will reveal all the other souls in existence as well as a simple net of being, and we're all connected. We're all connected, and we attracted each other into this time-space continuum to reflect back this wholeness, what Thomas Merton calls the hidden wholeness. And that's the whole premise of the science of mind. Now, the teaching of the science of mind is about involution and evolution. This comes from Sri Aurobindo, a Hindu mystic that Ernest Holmes studied. And the science of mind is written on three levels. It's important to understand the first level, the lowest level, kindergarten, is a mental science. Change your thinking, change your life. And when you realize, when you change the thinker, the thinking naturally changes, well, then you get out of kindergarten. The second level is a religious science, where you recognize there's a power for good greater than you are, and you can use it. But there's still duality there. There's still this power external, and you as an instrument and using it, which is kind of, I think, spiritual abuse. But then there is the third level, where you recognize it's all one, and you are that oneness. And then Dr. Holmes would say something as simple like, you can have as much good in this world as you can take. But he said, you can only take what you can embody. Now, put that one on the inside. You can only take as much love as you can embody love. You can only take as much peace out there as you embody peace. So it's all about taking this thread of our true nature and beginning to allow it to awaken within ourselves. He goes on at the very end of this day, to discover the thread that goes through everything is the main reason we listen, we express, and then we find meaning. And that's how the book starts, to find that place where you can find meaning. And it's everywhere trying to show itself to you. So yesterday I pulled out I've got so many magazines for you, Gigi, that I haven't read. And I was saving them for the winter, all my garden magazines, and I pulled out Horticulture. It's the most cerebral, the most spiritual of all the garden magazines. And in that, there's a man named Jeff Cox. And he blows me away because he talks philosophy at a plant level. And he was talking about the social world of trees. Now, the week before, he talked about bacteria and fungi in the soil and how the intelligence is under the ground. And he talked about how the human species, when we would clear cut a forest, we would destroy that life force. But what they found by doing ecological foresting is you leave the old trees, they call them the grandmother trees, and the grandmother trees, through their root system, working in in harmony with fungus and microbial things, the fungus gets carbon from the tree, from the roots of the tree, and then, this is will blow you away, the roots of the tree are like a heartbeat. And we, our heartbeat's like kathud, kathud. The tree's is much slower, but through the roots and the heart of the tree, it sends the water up through the roots into the leaves of the tree. It's actually a living, breathing instrument. And instead of, you know, Darwin, who said it's the survival of the species and they're all competing, he said it's not that way in nature. It's rather harmony. And when the grandmother trees take care of the other plants in the forest, and then you get to the realization in this philosophical, there aren't separate trees and separate plants. It's all the forest. It's all the one life, seemingly separate, but really one. And I'm sitting there yesterday reading this article about the trees and the forest and the sacredness of it, and tears were coming down my eyes, and I was beginning to realize, no wonder I have such an intimate relationship with nature, because she's sentient, which means she feels that the grandmother trees literally will feed the smaller trees so that they can survive. Now, to know that you're part of something like that, and then this morning when I came in and I'm going down the Facebook things and I see Einstein saying it's not about the mind, there's an intelligence that's so much greater, and it informs us. You can call it the divine imagination, you can call it intuition, and it's always there. And then he says, Einstein, when you realize that matter isn't real, but matter is all energy, and the energy of consciousness, the energy of love, the energy of light, and we meet in that energy field, could we begin to listen? My beloved Susan took a walk, and in that walk, she saw one human being with their dog, and then she walked and she saw the river, the Tennessee River, and she saw all the beauty of nature around her. What if every time we take a walk in nature, there's this opportunity for us to merge with our true nature, to come home, if you will? So listening to Thich Nhat Hanh in Plum Village, he says the instructions to embrace the suffering, and in so doing transform it, the first instruction is to stop. You have to stop. Just pause long enough to sing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Just stop long enough to look into the eyes of a deer like Serena did and to see yourself reflected back. Stop long enough to water a plant that's thirsty and you have a relationship with it. That's the first step, is to stop and to observe what's arising. And you know, the irony is, it's not about programming some kind of Pollyanna metaphysical treatment to claim what you want. Strangely, it's about opening to what is, and oftentimes what is the darkness, is the confusion, is the grist for the mill, you know? And then when you embrace that, it gives you a gift. It sets you free. And that doesn't mean that sadness won't come anymore. No, sadness will come. It's so funny, on my birthday, this strange thing popped up, and I mean to send it to you, Michael. It was an old TV moment with Jimmy Stewart on The Tonight Show, and he's really old at this stage. And Jimmy Stewart said, I've written a poem about my dog. Do you want to hear it? And he couldn't, you know, he was an old man. He pulled the paper out, and he's unfolding the paper. And Johnny Carson said, you know, maybe we need to postpone the wedding. This is taking so long. And then, of course, Ed McMahon is laughing, and you really realize you're in The Tonight Show. And then he starts to read the poem about his dog, Bo. And he said, Bo, and Bo was so much like Baby Speck. He said, Bo was a big dog that came into our family. I think it was a golden retriever. And Bo was obsessed with the ball. And everywhere he would carry his ball, so did Baby Speck. And if you wanted Bo to come, now you'd ask him to come, he wouldn't come. You'd ask him to sit, he wouldn't sit. You ask him to stay, he wouldn't stay. The postman would come, he'd attack the postman. You'd try to discipline him, he'd bite you. And he says, and when, you know, I'm older, and he says, my wife would take Bo, and she'd go down the street, and he'd be pulling her down the street. He says, what a sight to see, Gloria being pulled by Bo, and I behind with the old dog going slower. And as the poem progressed, he said, but I go to bed at night. I'm getting older, so I go up early, and Bo comes with me up to the bedroom, and he lay in the bed beside me at night. And then pretty soon you'd see him, the ball would go under the bed, and he'd have to go under the bed, fetch the ball, give the ball back to Bo. He'd be in his bed with the ball. And then he says, then Bo jumps up on the bed, and he crawls in between the two of us. And the next thing you know, I experience him sitting up and looking at me, just staring at me. And I look at Bo, and then he looks at me with the eyes, and he gives a big sigh. Ah, You know, and in that instant, I heard baby Speck. She used to do the same thing. She'd give a sigh. I can still hear that sigh. And he'd say, you know, and he was having this intimate connection with this dog who wasn't really separate from him. And he says, but now Bo is not with us on the planet. And he said, and I still wake up at night and I see him sitting there looking at me. And I still hear that sigh. And I reach over to touch his head, and his head isn't there. And as I'm listening to Jimmy Stewart do this poem on the Johnny Carson show, Johnny's crying and I'm crying. Of course, I send it to Jody because we kind of share that dog experience. And I realized this was really sacred for me, to realize that we are so connected and that those that we love don't die, their form goes, and we are asked to experience that thread that doesn't change, the thread that's always there. Now, is that too much of a challenge for us? I don't know. So this week I had the experience with the fungi and the microordial things in the earth, with the trees. Now, what if they're connecting at a deep level? And this fungus knows, it's intelligent, and it's communicating to these trees. Einstein, when he talked, he said, when we can look at nature, at everything around us, and realize that it is alive with consciousness, and that it is showing us how to be in the world, can you imagine what kind of world we'd experience? When I taught my ministerial class, one of the very first books I used is called The Simpler Way by Margaret Wheatley. And she's a philosopher scientist. And in her book, she looks at nature and how nature is a gospel, how it's teaching us how to be. But she talks about the highest form of nature around us is bacteria and things like that. These microorganisms that can learn to work in harmony with each other for the greater good of something bigger than itself. Could we? And you know, and then in this article on the trees, they talk about in our intestines, there is this intelligence within our body that knows how to keep us healthy, in our bellies, that knows how to take food and turn it into whatever it is. Could we see ourselves as a living organism that has consciousness and not see ourselves as this egoic self? So I'm going to give you just a taste of what Llewellyn does, because I'm a Sufi, and they say the Sufis, you don't become a Sufi, you're born a Sufi. The Sufis are the lovers of God, and you can tell them because they have this ache in their heart to experience this love that's so much bigger. And you can it can torment them if it isn't harnessed correctly. And in the Sufi tradition, you know, they say when you remember him, he remembers you. When you remember this divine love, well, then this divine love awakens within you, and it begins to lead your life. You're not doing it. Divine love is fueling your thoughts and your actions and your evolution. And could we make an agreement with ourselves to consciously evolve while we're here on this planet? To do the evolutionary, that's what this whole thing is about. It's about the evolution of the world. And it starts with you and me. It starts with community. It starts with Sangha. And as what Thich Nhat Hanh said to those 600 people that came to Plum Village, you can come here with your suffering. He said, but tune into the energy of the Sangha, its peace, its wholeness, and you literally align with it. Just like the microordial things under the forest, we can align to the microordial net of Indra that knows wholeness, that knows peace, and that can be the law of our life. So he called this mature spirituality at the very beginning of the book. Let me give you a taste of Llewellyn. His writing just blows me away. Okay. Around us is an unending revelation. Am I not your Lord, says in the Quran, to which we say, yes, we witness you. From the little water bug on the floor, am I not your Lord, yes, we witness you. To the flower that's blooming, am I not your Lord, yes, we witness you. Am I not your Lord, the tree, yes, we witness you. It's everywhere. So around us is an unending revelation, and in every single instant, the divine is being born anew. Could we awaken to this birth within ourselves? This presence that says, behold, I make all things new. So it's creating a whole new you, a new perception, a new way of entering into the world, a new way of embracing our suffering, a new way of looking at the outer and not calling it the problem, but how can I bring a greater awareness to the outer? So this is the mature spirituality. In every instant, the divine is being born anew, and we are also at the beginning of a new era. A new pattern of life is coming into being. And it's imperative that we become, you know, we're the ones that we've been waiting for. If we can't do it here in Alabama by holding the high watch, by embracing a greater vision of the world, what's going to happen to our world? The title of the book is called Awakening the World, and the premise is that you are the world, that you're not separate from it. You're the trees. You're the air that we breathe. You're the water. You're all of that. And yes, you've got this little skin-encapsulated ego, but that's not what you are. You're a deer, Serena Sage, and you're an elephant. And you came in as a beautiful young girl in this go-around. That's why the elephant gave her a gift when she was in Thailand. That's why the deer came and looked into her eyes. She wanted me to treat for the right and perfect mate, and I said, I think it's a four-legged for you, my darling. Anyway, we are also at the beginning of a new era and a new pattern of life that's coming into being. And we are the midwives of this new awakening, which is happening on Earth, and it is taking place right now. We're not separate from the Earth. You know, there's an alliance called the Pachamama Alliance, and it's about recognizing the sacredness of this planet. Every now and then I watch the Smithsonian, and they talk about the rainforests and how they're alive and they breathe. Could we know ourselves as part of all of that, this living space? We have to leave behind the old patterns, the old ways of walking on this Earth, and of looking toward heaven outside of ourselves. You know, it's funny, Llewellyn starts this chapter by quoting Jesus. And Jesus said, I speak, but they do not hear. So he spoke in metaphor. And the metaphor that he chose to reference was, Jesus says, you can't put this new wine in old wineskins. This new consciousness needs a new container. Now, you and I need to be that new container. It doesn't need the old-time religion that was based on God outside of ourselves. We need to know that this divine presence is right there within all of us. We can access it. We can listen to it. It can guide us. It can expand us. It can help us meet our suffering and see the grace in the suffering. And then you realize it's all grace. But it is. But we are responsible, able to respond to this new evolution. And in order to do that, we have to die daily to be born again in this. We have to be courageous enough to be a midwife of something that we don't know, that could likely drive us crazy with this love that intoxicates us. That's the beginning of the Sufi path. The first stage is called Tawbah, the turning of the heart. The heart turns toward this something that aches and longs to be revealed. And once you do, you think you're kind of going crazy. I mean, I remember when I started reading Rumi, I would cry every Sunday, and I think I upset Judy Graff's mother because I didn't see her in church anymore because I was literally going through a metamorphosis. The second phase after the Tawbah is called Fana, which is called annihilation, which is where you die and then the love takes over your life. You, the lover who's seeking the beloved, is no longer separate from the beloved. Then the beloved is alive within you. Now, it's kind of difficult to live your life knowing that you are the ocean of love. And then to keep that ocean in, because sometimes that ocean wants to be a tsunami. You have to say, no way. You need to be nice, calm, and then you're trying to control the ocean. You can't control the ocean. But what you can do is you can channel it, hopefully, in a playful, creative way like Tia does. And here's what he says. We are midwives of this new awakening on Earth, and it's taking place right now. We have to leave behind the old patterns, the old ways of walking on Earth. We are stepping into an era of oneness that will bring together matter and spirit, that will bring together the feminine and the masculine. And our spiritual practice must reflect this new alignment. We cannot afford to see ourselves as separate anymore. Then everything is you. Boy, let's talk about Tantra. You know, Tantra is this merging energetically with another. Now, the other could be a dog, like it was with Jimmy Stewart. The other could be the tree and the mitochondria, coming together in a shared intimacy for the greater good of all. So could we have this new way of being? Our spiritual practice needs to reflect this new alignment. And then our soul's journey is part of the journey of the world of creation. We're not separate from this very world that we inhabit. He said, our heart is connected to the heart of the world. Our remembrance is the remembrance of the world. And through our awakening, the world can awaken. Everything changes and yet nothing changes. The journey of a soul coming home is like a spiritual heartbeat of the world becoming realized. So we're coming home. We're coming home to a place that's already there. It's that thread. So when I say go home, what does that mean to you? Does it mean go to your house on 1301B Page or wherever you lived? That's where I lived in San Francisco. Now, why did that address come up? I swear to God, you know, when you get to be my age, addresses pop in there. 305 Beverly Drive, Omaha, Nebraska, 9 years old. Yeah. Home is not a location. It's holding Bird in your arms, even though he's not there in form. When I saw Jody holding the teddy bear the other, just now, I realized she was home in that field of love, the love that's a verb. And then you understand the mature spirituality. We're finishing up our Richard Rohr class, and he talks about moving out of an objective reality into a subjective reality. So for those who want an explanation of that, the subjective is the invisible. The subjective would be the field of love. The objective field would be the forms. These are all objective forms of the love. And sometimes we need an objective form in order to experience the subjective reality. That is just the one life, it's the one love, it's the one light, endlessly revealed. And when it begins to awaken, this light within you, you begin to glow. You begin to shine. I remember Pam Hurdy, we used to have a thing called the lunch lifts on Wednesday. Always trying to be creative here at the center. Isn't that how you found the church, Jody, coming to a lunch lift? And, oh.
I met Pam at work.
Oh, you met Pam at work. But Pam Hurdy would come to the lunch lifts, and Jody saw a light that Pam had. She still does. She has this, she twinkles. And the thing about Pam and her twinkling light, when she sends me a birthday card, she always includes little twinkly things that fall out of the card, and then they're all over the carpet. And then Trey yells at me about picking up the little twinkly things. So I get on my knees, and I'm picking up the twinkling things, and I'm laughing as I'm... And so Jody, I think, said, I want to have what she has. I want that light that she has. Well, what if once we begin to drink from the river of light, it takes up residence within us? And you talk about enlightenment, we get lighter. We begin to see the light even when the darkest times are there. We begin to see a totality of possibility that's trying to emerge. Instead of calling the finite real, and then everything preaches at a different level. It was Goethe that said, if you label someone, you limit them. But if you see their potential and the good inherent within them, you're literally calling it forth. So what if we were to take that same idea to the world? If you see the world as a problem, as a mess, as, you know, and it truly is kind of a mess right now, but someone, I think it was Tia, that said, it's always been this way. Because something needs to emerge, something needs to give birth, and it's a new consciousness. You know, when we do spiritual mind treatment, we never treat for things, we never treat for objects. We treat for the consciousness of health, the consciousness of peace, the consciousness of divine love, knowing that it's already there, and that the consciousness will ultimately manifest in the objective world of our experience. That's the pragmatic way of using our beautiful teaching of the science of mind. What if it could be at such a bigger level? We could take it globally. We could even take it universally. Because if it's all space, then we're cosmic beings. We come from the universe. We also come from that microbial fungi under the planet. And then it was Meister Eckhart that said, he who can see God in the smallest of things is better than seeing an angel. So then instead of trying to have some supernatural transcendent experience, you realize that we get to be the object of transformation. We get to be the caterpillar that eats and eats and eats and eats until it goes through a metamorphosis and has to create a cocoon and go within and literally become liquid in order for the imaginal cells of the butterfly within our soul to take form. And then we have to have enough strength and courage to eat out of the very thing that's enclosing us to emerge as a whole new order of being. That's the path. It's a path of transformation, and we're all in it together. It was the Hopis that talked about their prophecy for this world, and they say we're all going down a river. It's called the river of light, the river of love, the river of life. And he said, observe who's in the river with you. You guys are in the river with me. He said, it's important to notice who's in the river and who's on the shoreline, who does not want to go through this evolutionary process. And then the Hopis say it's important that we keep our head above water, that we move forward, we don't look backward, because we are the ones that we've been waiting for. And then it says in that Hopi prophecy, above all, at this stage of our evolution, we cannot afford to take anything personally because there is no separate self. I met this man the other day and we were talking about his dog who passed. And he says, you know, I grieved more when my dog died than when my mother died. But then he said, my mother, she hurt my feelings and she was mean my whole life. And as he's going on taking down his mother and praising his dog, I said, you know, nobody can really hurt our feelings, don't you? Well, he didn't want to hear that. And so he stormed away in his anger, his self-righteous. I was trying to give him that little pearl of great price to help him step out of the suffering of the narrative that she done me wrong. Because his mother was been gone on the planet for a long time, and he's still holding that seed of resentment. So what if we get to be ruthlessly honest with our suffering? And when something comes up, maybe a toxic idea, instead of identifying with it, we could see it as a doorway for transformation and call forth forgiveness, call forth acceptance. I mean, that's the dance, and that is the life of expression, to express the higher idea, because life is expressing all around us. Could we hear it? And then be engaged in a conversation with it. Teach me and show me the way, O butterfly, as you go through your metamorphosis. Teach me and show me the way, old dog, as you look on the bed and tell you that I'm devoted to you and that I will never leave you or forsake you. When Jody put that phone up to my ear and up to Bert's ear, the last conversation I had with him, I just remember saying, you know, I'll always be with you and you'll always be with me. And I swear to God, he hasn't left an instant. He's just not in his form anymore. And I'm so grateful for that awareness, because then I feel like I'm closer to having this conversation with the universe. The universe that's always speaking. So I'm going to take you into it. I'm going to invite my brother Raul to go back to the magic mindfulness bell. Thich Nhat Hanh says, when we can live in mindfulness, that every moment is sacred and that everything is here for us. Remember, there's these four levels of consciousness we teach in Science of Mind. The lowest level is the to-me consciousness, where you think life happens to you. The second level is the for-me consciousness, where you realize that everything is here for you. The third level of consciousness is the through-me consciousness, where you realize I am a conduit through which life is revealed, through which life expresses, through which love is revealed. And then the last level of consciousness, which is what we're seeking to evolve into, is the as-me consciousness. It's all you. The earth, the little water bug that Jody set free, the little mouse that someone found in their basement, instead of putting it in a mouse trap, they put a little splint on its leg because it couldn't walk and started having a relationship with a mouse. Call it the Cinderella effect. Gigi's been there. My brother, will you give me a ring of the bell? Wow, how about one more, a little softer? Okay, as the bell diminishes, we can almost witness thought diminishing. And we're left with a deafening silence, a profound calmness, an abiding peace. And we begin to experience this as the context of our life, the field from which we operate. And then we smile to the stillness. And if little thoughts should arise and want us to pull us into them, we smile to those thought patterns. And we realize we can choose to not think those thoughts for just this time. And we give an exhalation. And in that exhalation, we stop. The most crucial thing to learn is to stop. To stop tormenting ourselves with thought. To stop shitting on ourselves. To just stop and be here now. And then time collapses and there's no past or future, but there is this eternal now moment breathing itself into existence. And we allow that eternal now moment to flower within our mind. And you hear Ram Dass saying, be here now. And if suffering should arise, you smile to that suffering and you embrace it, whatever that suffering might look like. And as you embrace that suffering, it's transformed. It literally is transformed. Like if you pick up a crying baby and you hold it in your arms and you rock it, after a while that crying baby stops crying. And she entrains herself to your heartbeat. And then you're rocking each other in this beautiful embrace of the one that knows no other. I hear Karen Drucker singing that self-care song, I will be gentle with myself. I will be tender with my heart. And I'll hold myself like a newborn baby child. Huh. And then she says, and I will only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. And in that self-nurturing prayer song, we come home. We stop efforting. We allow for ourselves to be an opening through which this divine light, love, peace, creativity, an inlet and an outlet. And as it moves in and as it moves out through us, as us, we are transformed. All we have to do is say yes and open to the mystery of this thread of divine love, this thread of genius that Einstein tapped, this thread that says, I of myself know nothing, but this divine intelligence, it doeth the work. And then we stand in awe of the outcome, of the flowering. We may just be a seed potential right now who cannot see the flower of our divine expression. And yet we know that the intelligence within the seed, the God seed, creates the God, the one God, the one life that is everywhere revealing itself. And we remember it. We witness it. We bow to it. The eighth psalm says, what is man that thou art mindful of him? Thou hast created him a little lower than the angels, and hath crowned him with honor and glory. And so when we see our life is here to honor this presence and to glorify it through our expression, well, then we realize it isn't our expression, it's the expression of the One. And then we can say, this life belongs to you, beloved. All there is you, beloved. Do with this life as you will. And then we wait upon the Lord, as they say, knowing that conditions manifest when they are ready to manifest and not before. Then we stop pushing the river and we flow in this river of transformation, this river of evolution, this river of life. Not as something separate from us, but as what we are. So I invite you to feel that presence within and all around, and place your hand over your heart, making that essential connection to the breath within the breath, and to this thread of that which never changes, to this universal self that we all share as an essential self. Let's say to that part of our beingness, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. I invite you to flow through my life, awakening me to every sacred moment, listening to your gospel, your good news, drinking in your light and love, allowing life to reveal her mysteries, so that you might use me for your glorification, for your beauty, for your good, for your truth, revealed on earth as it is in heaven. We are the way. This light manifests in the earth. We open our eyes, we open our hearts, we open our hands. We are transmitters and receivers of this grace, and we celebrate it, we potentiate it by coming together. Thank you for sending in your tithes out there in virtual land. I'll have information on the new class in January, and celebrate the moments. I love you.
I am overflowing with love. I am overflowing. Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You are love and you are light. Namaste.